Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up!
By my co-host Couture. What's going on, Couture?
Not much. What's going on?
Not too much. We're just going to be me and you tonight because unfortunately Craig is not going to be able to join us. His one of his grandparents is really sick. So hopefully that everything will be cool. But yeah, Craig won't be with us tonight. But we will be joined shortly as soon as he finishes eating by Lance Storm. So. It should still be a good show. So what's going on with you, Katrina? What do you want to talk about before Lance calls in?
I don't know. I went to Legoland today.
To Legoland?
Mm-hmm.
Now, is this like a place where you can go and you can make shit with, like, regular-sized Legos, or is it like a giant piece of the Legos, like just a giant, like, fucking playground or something?
It's kind of like a playground. They got, like, Lego stores and stuff like that. My two nephews and my niece came in today, and so we took them there. They came in for Easter, so we took them over there. It was pretty fun.
Cool. Were you playing with the Legos?
Or are you just watching? No, I don't play with Legos. I just watch.
Yeah, I could just see you building a professional wrestling ring or a Hell in the Cell with Legos.
I've gotten to the point where I only buy them toys. Like, I'll either buy them, when I buy them something, it'll either be something to have to do with Star Wars or wrestling, so I can play with them, too. So, that's how I am.
Okay, well, we're being joined by our guest right now. He is a former WWE superstar, former WCW superstar, former ECW superstar. I'd say former Smoky Mountain Wrestling superstar, but let's be honest, he wasn't a superstar then. Lance Storm, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Ed.
Cool, man. Cool. Unfortunately, Craig's not with us tonight. He's having some family issues, so it's just me and Couture. So we know that you wanted to do the show because your TV show is pretty much ready to go on the air. So why don't you give us a big update on World of Hurt?
Yeah, World of Hurt premieres Sunday, May 1st, 5 p.m. Eastern nationwide in Canada. It will also air throughout the week additional replays, but the first run episodes will be Sunday nights at 5 p.m. Eastern on The Cave in Canada. I've managed to see 4 of the 10 episodes so far, and I'm pretty happy with it.
That's good. Now,
What's the format of the show, Lance?
It's a 30-minute show, it's 10 episodes, and we've got 10 students, for lack of a different term, and each episode really primarily focuses on each person's struggle through the course. So it's not day one, day two, or week one and week two. It's this student showing up the first day, and then highlights obviously edited down through their three-week training process, as well as their performance at the live event at the end of it all. And then the next episode will focus on someone different. So not everyone is on every episode, but, you know, there's usually four or five people on each episode because there's all the interaction and reactions between the main focused character and then the others.
So it's not an elimination contest like most of the other reality shows that are on TV.
Yeah, it was, I think it worked out better that way, but it had to be by design. Some kind of structure as far as Canadian television content that the way the grant money or the programming grants worked, it couldn't be a contest or anything that could be considered like a game show. It had to be a documentary style. I think docudrama was the official term. So it could chronicle the struggle and their training, but it couldn't be a prize at the end, and it couldn't be an elimination because then it changed its designation, and I think would change the way they got the funding for the show.
I kind of like that. I like the way it sounds. It just makes it sound so much different than, you know, other shows. And you know, this way, you don't have to worry about taking a Matt Cross off the show. You know, so yeah, it actually sounds pretty cool. How would we be able to watch it here in the States?
I don't know yet. I had heard that they did have a deal with someone in the States, although I didn't get that from Pyramid Productions, the people that did it. So I don't know that's for sure. But I have heard a rumor that they did find a deal in the U.S. that'll start a little bit later. I don't know exactly when or how. I'll obviously post that on my site and on Facebook when I find out for sure. I would be very surprised if it didn't end up on YouTube unofficially at some point in the very near future. Most things usually do. But as far as an actual definite venue for Americans or other international people, I don't know of one yet. You might just have to move up here, Ed. It's warm now, so.
I don't know. It was just snowing about a week ago. It's already feels like it's 90 degrees down here. I don't know if I can handle the cold weather right now.
Or just order a Canadian dish system from up here, and then you'll be able to get Canadian programming down there.
Yeah, I'll be able to watch World of Hurt and Corner Gas.
Exactly. What more do you need?
Cool. Katrina, did you have anything you wanted to ask on World of Hurt?
What was like just a typical day of filming, like, you know, doing something like that? Could you kind of take us through a typical day?
Yeah, it was very difficult, actually. We had really, really long days. I'm debating on how much I want to get into, because I know after shooting it, I don't enjoy reality television as much as I used to. And granted, I was always a huge skeptic and didn't like a lot of reality television, but it's with the way it's shot, because they don't like having cameras on camera, you really have to. We structured the mornings. We'd have, you know, a bit of a game plan on what we wanted to train and do, and we'd do all the training stuff and shoot that in the morning. But in the afternoon, you had to do all the smoke and mirror TV crap, like get all the reactions and so forth. And that's where I have a hard time with reality television now. Like even watching Tough Enough, when you saw Steve Austin cutting his promo on the three people at the end, and he's cutting a promo on the you know, the Melina Alicia Fox chick, and then they show Eric Watts' reaction. And you know that was a reaction they shot later in the day, because
yeah.
they don't have cameras on everybody's faces all the time. So the afternoon a lot of times would be the reaction shots. So while we don't have all the crap in the house, pretty much all of it takes place at the facility. There's, you know, everyone at ringside reacting to what's happening in the ring. Well, we had to do a lot of the reactions and stuff in the afternoon to what happened. So whatever happened in that training process in the morning that they needed reactions for, and that's where the directors and stuff have, you know, when they're filming in the morning, they'll make notes about different things that happen and the way they're going to want to edit it into the show. And then in the afternoon, it's okay. And a lot of times my afternoon, I would just be in the ring half-assed walking through wrestling stuff, or sometimes just goofing around through wrestling stuff, because they had to get the three cameras shooting the people's faces at the ring apron to get the right reactions for, okay, remember this morning when so-and-so landed on their head. We need you to react to that now. Because they don't have 10 cameras to have everybody's face on camera all the time. So that's where, you know, reality
it's
television...
It's not as good a reaction as you would get as when it actually happened, you know, kind of reaction, kind of a
generally
fake reaction
not.
After reaction.
Yeah, because to a certain extent, you know, we're not as good of actors, but... You know, I think sometimes they get lucky and they will get the actual reactions because they would try to have, you know, we had, I think, a three-camera shoot. So they've got, you know, two or three of them shooting the action, and they'll have somebody else sort of hoping to get other things if you can. But a lot of times, yeah, you have to try to get a reenactment. And even if it is dragging the monitor in so we can watch whatever devastating event happened so that they can see it back and try to react to it. But it really sort of kills the illusion for a little bit. When you realize that a lot of it had to be shot after the fact, because just it's impossible to shoot it all in real time and get all the reactions you want. So, you know, the mornings, you know, we started pretty early, you know, would be our 3 or 4, and that's where the days ended up being way longer than I expected. Because I'm like, oh, we can go in and shoot, you know, 3 or 4 hours of training in the morning. It'll be an easy day. So we'd go in and do our 3 or 4 hours of training in the morning. It was an easy day. And it's like, okay, break for lunch. It's like, okay, we need reaction shots, and we need you to comment on what you saw this morning. We need. It's like, oh, my God, and then it's all the TV stuff you have to do. So there were really long days, and, again, I've seen 4 episodes so far, and it's really cool to see how they pull it all together, and I thought they did a really great job of showing the training, where we really wanted to walk a fine line, as we didn't want this just being expose, and since we are... doing people that have already been trained, trying to fine-tune them, we don't have to, you know, again, this is how you throw a punch, this is how you take a bump so much. So it wasn't the expose side of it. We showed a lot of the hard work and the training that has to go in, and I thought they did a great job of putting that together to show that. And then they have all the interview footage and all the, you know, the drama that the other people tend to have added to the show. But with a 30-minute format, you don't have a lot of time to waste. And I found with the episodes when they're over, you got the gist of what was going on, you got a bit out of each person, but you're left wanting a little bit more, which I think is good, rather than having the episode go a little bit long. And with it being 30 minutes, we don't have time for, you know, field trips to have dogs chase you, or, you know, cheerleading trips or dance contests. It is very much more focused around the training process.
Yeah.
I'm actually glad that you explained that, because I've been watching the YouTube videos of the Tough Enough, and I was just thinking to myself, they got all these awesome like close-ups of Stone Cold and all these cuts, and at no time do you see a camera, and it was kind of like in my mind how they did that. So I'm actually kind of glad you explained that.
Yeah, because even if you've ever seen real TV shot, you know, whether it be an episode of Corner Gas where you have the conversation and they cut back and forth between each person's face. It's like they do all of the one with the camera behind the one person who's not mic'd, and they just get the one guy's dialogue, and then they switch the setup around and get the other guy's dialogue and edit it together. So a lot of times, you know, a lot of these scenes, that's what you have to do with reality television as well. So, and a lot of times, too, I noticed in a couple episodes they do accidentally or whatever, they get a couple times where the cameras get caught on camera. And it's just that situation where, if something unpredictable happens or somebody makes a big reaction and something happens, you know, the cameras just spin and try to catch it to get the real reactions when you can, you know, whether someone, you know, starts screaming at someone or, again, as an example, a fight breaks out while we're training, it's like all of a sudden the cameras spin and try to catch the other action. And so every once in a while they will catch a camera crew, but they really try to avoid that. So you have to do a lot of the reaction shots after the fact, which makes for... long days.
Now, you just mentioned Tough Enough. Do you think that Tough Enough airing right now is a benefit to your show, or do you think it could hurt your show because people would be more interested in the WWE's product?
I don't think it's really going to affect us, especially considering as of right now, our show's only airing in Canada, and Tough Enough doesn't air here. So I don't think it's as much. I did... asked the production company when they first, because we had shot ours already before they announced that they were going to shoot a Tough Enough. And I'm like, oh, what do you guys think of this? Do you think they're going to steal our thunder? And he's like, no, I think it'll just create more interest. If nothing else, this is, you know, a Canadian different version of it where there might be interest into comparing it to. Because when you're on, again, The Cave in Canada is a digital channel that you know, not every home even has, and we don't have a whole lot of homes up here. So it's not like we're expecting, you know, 2 million viewers. So, you know, I don't think Tough Enough is going to affect us. Those who were going to find it and see it, I think, are still going to. And perhaps if Tough Enough was a big success, there might be more interest in us being able to market to the states as a, hey, we've got a chance for another, you know, similar yet different product that we can get our hands on at a pretty reasonable rate. So I think probably, if anything, it'll benefit us more than hurt. But at the end of the day, I think when you're talking a digital cable channel in Canada, it's pretty off the radar from a level of Tough Enough.
Have you been able to see Tough Enough?
Pardon?
Have you been able to catch any of the episodes of Tough Enough, like online or anything?
I went to YouTube and tried to watch the first episode. And to be honest, I tapped out at the 12-minute mark, which was the first sexist fight in the house. When they started doing the women don't belong in wrestling, you need to go into the kitchen. To me, it just screamed bad scripted skit.
Yeah.
And I think, too, at the 12-minute mark, I don't know any of these people. I don't care that they're arguing in this house. So at that point, I found it was, I think that was part one. I found part four on YouTube, and I watched the Steve Austin promo at the end because I heard it was really good. And, you know, big surprise, Steve Austin is the ray of sunshine in the show of Tough Enough.
What did you think of his performance?
I thought Steve was great, although, again, I had a harder time after doing a reality show watching another one where, you know, the segue from his promo on the one girl sort of flowed well into the next one, and I just start thinking, is this real or is this scripted? But on the whole, Steve was really great, and again, if it was more of the training and less of the house stuff, I think I'd probably watch it. So I find that with Ultimate Fighter, too, that as soon as they cut to the house, I hit the fast-forward button. Because I don't like watching the drama that I don't believe. You know, if I see the training at the training facility, I'm all for it. If I'm seeing fights, I'm all for that. If I'm seeing matches, I'm all for that. And maybe there would be a little bit of perverse enjoyment into watching, you know, the dogs chase people down and tackle them. But as far as just arguing social drama in the house, I have better things to do with my time.
They haven't focused a lot on like all the stuff in the house. It's been more either the training or like the extracurricular stuff, you know, like the dogs and stuff like that. Not a lot of stuff in the house from what I've seen.
And one thing too, I didn't watch a lot of it. You know, I watched half of the first episode, but I think too that's one thing I like about our format with World of Hurt, which actually when they first pitched it, I argued against them with it for a while. But when you focus each episode primarily on the one character, you get a bit more, I find you get attached a bit more. You know, when you introduce the character at the beginning and you start watching their growth through the training and so forth, that you get a little bit more attached to them. So, you know, in the format we did, you'd get the Matt Cross episode. And then you'd get the, you know, the Rima, whatever her name is, Miss USA episode, where you'd sort of get to see their struggle rather than, okay, everyone's going to run ropes today, and she failed, she goes home. It's more, okay, these are the 10 obstacles that Matt Cross had to do, and these are the six obstacles that she had to do. So I think in the end, I think the format we chose ended up working out really well.
Lance, I want to ask you about Rima because if you listen to, like, the Brian and Dave shows, they kind of always joke that she has, you know, immunity for the first round, but they need to get her out of there soon because she can't work. My question is, for you as someone who has a wrestling school and just sits this reality school is, yes, Rima can't work, but Rima is the only – I don't know if you've seen enough of the show to see this, but Rima is basically the only one who looks like a star, the only one that, like, looks like a superstar, has a great look, and – you know, even though she can't work, like I say, as good as the other ones, if the other ones really aren't, like, great workers, shouldn't that take into account the star-making ability of who they choose and keep on the show? And that just,
well,
you know, kick her off because she can't work?
Well, I think the problem is you're falling into the trap of thinking the show's real. I think if I thought she had the look and that star quality but didn't know what she was doing yet, I would want to get her off the show before she's exposed as not knowing what she's doing, and then send her to Florida and then bring her in as a star. I don't know if I'd want to invest a lot of TV into people looking at her thinking she's crappy. I think I would rather, you know, show her personality briefly, get the pub that you can out of Miss USA being on Tough Enough, and then get her off the show before people develop a dislike for her because, again, as mad as how many people were that Matt Cross got bumped instead of her, you know, you could start end up damaging her star credibility or power in the future if you end up getting backlash for this untalented girl being on the show. But if you get her off the show and then send her to Florida and make something of her and then debut her as a star, you've got something.
You know, as great as that the segment with Stone Cold and Matt Cross was, I felt like so horrible for Matt Cross getting eliminated. But now that you explain how they take their reactions, Matt Cross deserved to get kicked off for his crappy reactions to everything in that segment. I mean, that was actually pretty bad.
That was one thing that I was really glad when we first started shooting World of Hurt, that I was so glad for the experience that these 10 students got. And it wasn't so much necessarily the additional 3-week training with me, but they had 3 weeks of television exposure, of having to work around cameras all the time, be aware that the cameras are there. And then also, well, again, there was, you know, a few times where they had to cut promos for the sake of the training. There was numerous times where, again, something would happen and they just grab somebody and drag them out of the room for another camera going, okay, we need you to react. What did you think of what just happened? And, you know, they've got to think on their feet, cut a promo, if you will, on, you know, what they just saw, whether they liked what they saw, whether they hate that person. So they got a lot of reaction time and camera time where they had to. Or even just the practice as far as a performer of, okay, remember this morning when this happened, you were really pissed off when this guy, you know, punched you in the face and stiffed you. We need you to react like that just happened 10 seconds ago. Give me your reactions. So it gave him a lot of, it gave all the students a lot of really valuable TV experience because they did at times just get, you know, grabbed and dragged out of the room with, okay, react, what did you think? And they've got to cut a promo on the fly. Or they'd have to, okay, remember what happened, you know, yesterday morning, we need your reaction to that, we forgot to shoot it. As well as just throughout the whole training process, be aware that there's 3 cameras there while they're doing the training or doing matches for the training of the show, be aware that, well, there's cameras there, you got to work them. This is, you know, not just a training session, it's a TV show. So it was really great experience for them all to have 3 weeks of, you know, intensive TV practice.
Now, Lance, I know there's too many for you to go into detail about every single one of the contestants, but could you, like, just very briefly give us a little quick description of all 10 people?
Okay. Carlo Cannon is a small, charismatic, high-flying guy from Australia. He's Filipino, actually, but he's, you know, born in Australia and got an Australian accent. Then there's Chris Knight, another Australian, who's the biggest guy in the show. He's about my height, but about 240. Good, solid worker, but not the most charismatic man. We've got T-Bone, who's from Newfoundland up here. An amazing personality and a really talented worker. I have high hopes that he'll end up in developmental inside of a year. Derek Cross, a local Albertan guy that was focusing on trying to experiment with character and went a little bit off the map with trying to push the envelope a little bit. Then we had Tom LaRuffa, who's from France, who is, you know, just in incredible shape, a great athlete, but like the French, a little bit of an attitude. And then we had a Ben English, a guy from England. Note the name, although one of the production guys thought he was from Australia for some reason, even after calling him English for 3 weeks. And then we had 4 women, 2 of which have already been signed to developmental deals. There's Irina, who is Bosnian originally. She's Croatian, but she moved to Australia when she was 11, so she's got an Australian accent. She's been signed to a developmental and just waiting for her visa. There's Tennille Taylor, who's Australian, who was just signed to a developmental. Who, again, talented worker and looks great. I think she'll do really well down there. Then we had Kira Forster is her name. I think she was Taya on the show. Is, again, a local Canadian who actually came in second, I think, at the in her division at the Arnold Fitness Classic last year. She's just a tremendous athlete. She was really green, but she's a really big, strong girl and is really good. And then lastly, I think, is just Casey Spinelli, who's from BC, who is a fiery Italian girl. If you combined an Italian temper and a New Jersey temper, you've got Casey. So she's fireworks on the show. And I think I got everybody. I hope I didn't skip somebody.
Now, Lance, you know, you mentioned a lot of Australians. Do you ever just think about just packing up and moving to school to Australia?
That's a really long flight. But, yeah, I have had, I think, close to probably close to 24 Australian students over the course of my 6 years. So,
Go ahead, Katrina.
Yeah, I was looking at some questions from the board here, and somebody was asking why do you stop using the giant spin wheel kick off the top rope?
Well, primarily because it's a move that gets a babyface pop. So I, as a heel, there's not as many occasions to use it. I started using it, back in Smoky Mountain Wrestling when I was a babyface. In ECW, you know, we were really more pushing the lines of what we could do athletically. And when you had guys like Rob Van Dam and so forth, you didn't have to worry about outshining your baby face. Then it's a pretty big-ass bump that I don't need to be taking four nights a week.
Yeah, I think I'd say the one time I saw you do that move was, it might have been, wasn't your ECW debut against Balls Mahoney? Somebody like that?
Very well could have been. I think I only used it in WWE once. I hit Kane with it when I was, and it was a backwards booked angle. But when I was fired after the invasion and trying to get my job back, I was really getting booked as the underdog. So I wanted to get my job back, and Flair kept booking me with bigger and more devastating opponents. Where if I was a babyface, it would have been the perfect gimmick. But yeah, I hit Kane with the top rope spin kick for a near fall to get my job back, but eventually lost anyway.
Is that when they found you working in WWF New York, mopping up or something like that?
Yeah, that was the first week after the invasion thing. I did the spot at New York where I was working a janitor at the WWE New York. And then the following week, when I just kept crashing into Flair's office demanding my job back, that he booked me against Kane, he booked me against Big Show, and then I think he eventually booked me against The Rock, and I won that when I got my job back, so...
Were you, after they did the whole, they ended the alliance angle and, you know, supposedly all the guys that, were in the alliance didn't have jobs after that. Were you glad to get, to be able to get back in the ring pretty soon after that? Because some of those guys, I think, didn't even actually come back to like after the first draft. So you came back kind of early. Were you happy to be able to get back so soon instead of just waiting out for a while?
Well, I was pretty much told they were going to, immediately anyway. Because the Sunday of the actual, when they did that immunity battle royal thing, that test one, upwards of an hour or so before the show, they were still debating on whether it was going to be test or me. So when, there was, a couple agents pushing for me and a couple agents pushing for test, an hour or two before the show, when they ended up going with Andrew, it was pretty much a, well, Andrew's going to do it, but don't worry, we'll have something for you, pretty much immediately. So there was never a point where I was too worried about it because obviously when I was, in the top two figuring on who we're going to bring back immediately anyway, I figured it was going to be pretty quick. So I think the very next Monday I did the New York thing, and then the one after that I was wrestling on a show again. So
now when all the WCW guys, first came over to WWF at the time, was it true that they had all you guys wearing your WCW T-shirts? You had to wear them or something like that?
Not that I recall, although I would imagine for in-ring segments and stuff when we were doing the invasion, they would have wanted us to just for the sake of giving us more of an appeal as far as a group look. Because I know Riff, just after we started doing the invasion, like when I did the run-in, and then Hugh Morris did, and I think Stacy did one. I had actually pitched to the office at that time of actually having, like, team sweats, like actually a WCW, gear.
Yeah.
That would appear more like a team so that it felt more like an invasion because, you know, if it's just me running in my red and white tights and then Bill's running in his, you know, Misfits in Action, you know, tie-dye, or not tie-dye, but camo shorts, and, you know, it really just looks like a bunch of individuals doing something. And I said, you know, if we actually had, you know, Team WCW sweatsuits and stuff that were all appearing part of a group, that it would have more of an invasion look and readily identify us as, oh, that's an invader, oh, that's an invader. And they apparently really liked the idea. And I know the seamstresses were actually working on team uniforms, like the actual sweatsuits with our, you know, the WCW logo and our names on them and stuff. Because at one point, someone in the office, oh, you should see them, they just both got yours done. And the invasion was dead so quickly that the angle got killed before they got the sweatsuits done.
I just remember, I guess it was Buck Bagwell. He got heat for coming to the arena, and the first thing he did is take his shirt off and walk around in his blue jeans or something like that. I don't know.
Well, entirely possible. There was, you know, 10 billion things Buff had heat for, so.
The board wanted to ask your thoughts on, you were once scripted to burn a U.S. flag on TV, and they wanted to get your thoughts on them firing Finley for getting, you know, trying to get a heat spot by having The Miz interrupt the national anthem.
There was two incidences where I was asked to or almost asked to do the burning the flag gimmick. I know in ECW, when I was doing the Calgary, Alberta, Canada thing, there was, again, I don't know if it is illegal or isn't illegal, but there was, you know, hearings or some kind of debate on whether it was going to become illegal or not in the U.S. at the time. And Paul was saying if they end up passing a law or repealing the law, whichever the case was, and burning the flag was going to be illegal, he wanted to send a camera to Calgary and have me do it there and then air it on the show to try to get heat. And I'm like, I have to clear U.S. Customs every week, and I still don't have a visa, Paul. Is this something we really want to be doing on television? And managed to talk him out of it. And then, yeah, it was just it was right around the anniversary of 9/11 that they wanted to test Christian and I to do the attempted flag burning in Madison Square Garden, which, you know, a lot of people thought was pretty tasteless, and the crowd pretty much reacted like they thought it was tasteless. But, yeah, the Finley getting fired over, you know, interrupting the national anthem, I thought was just absurd. I would imagine probably the person that fired him thought so, too. But, you know, it's same with the Bryan Danielson thing. If, you know, if there's a major sponsor of your company that's offended, you've got to do whatever you have to keep them happy. And from what I understand, the National Guard or whoever it was that was offended was a, you know, a big sponsor of WrestleMania. And it's like you can't really, you know, if it's a multi-million dollar sponsorship deal, you know, you've got to do what you got to do to salvage it. So Finley ended up taking the bullet. I'm hoping that if that is the case, you know, he'll be brought back in a few months, or maybe even was getting covert royalty checks or something for the sake of we'll take care of you, you just got to take the heat for a while. And if that was the case, I have no doubt that Finley would be willing to take the bullet if need be. But when you consider, you know, no one was ever offended at the 10 billion times the Canadian national anthem was interrupted for the sake of, you know, my character and angle on WCW television, or the amount of times that, you know, Shawn Michaels was on TV wiping his ass with the Canadian flag, or all the other things that have been done for somebody so offended.
I don't think Nikolai Volkoff ever finished the national anthem when he tried to sing it.
Yeah, and you know, and there's just so much stuff like that that, you know, to, you know, be so mad that, you know, that the company felt like they had to fire somebody to appease you because you were so angry. I think that's a bit much. Like, if the National Guard was that offended, I think, you know, even if they just said, you know, I really found that tasteless, I don't want you doing it again, being the maddest, I think, would be reasonable. But at the end of the day, you know, it's something that's been done in the business a million times. You know, how much damage is really being done just by interrupting the song? You know, actually, again, I don't know whether it was the national anthem or whether it was America the Beautiful or what, but I know the Un-Americans interrupted Lillian singing, you know, America the Beautiful one time, you know, to get heat, and was put into a video package. It's pretty, you know, standard fodder in the wrestling business, so.
Now, you just mentioned about people being mad, so that just made me think of one of the questions I wanted to answer, because it's a backstage story that just came out that really sounds really absurd. But what are your kind of your thoughts on the whole John Morrison, Melina, Trish Stratus nubbing and stuff? You know, it's like, you know, Melina's a heel, so why would she even think she would be in the match? I mean, what are your opinions on just wrestlers snubbing each other for, like, just really stupid reasons?
Well, I think little things like that. Well, I think little things like this happen a lot. It's just, I don't know how or why it became public. You know what I mean? I don't even know the whole story. I just heard that there was, you know, Morrison had said something or made some kind of comment about being unhappy with Trish, and, you know, she responded that he, you know, snubbed her at the show or whatever. But, you know, little things like that. Everyone's got, you know, everyone's got an ego. Everyone's got, you know, a hot head and do or say things occasionally that, you know, you're pissed off about. But, you know, generally speaking, you know, you deal with them yourselves and they don't need to end up on Twitter or in interviews or out on the internet. So I don't know the whole story. And again, you know, whether he thought that she, you know, took too much of the match that got cut or whether he was mad that, you know, she got the spot and someone else didn't, I don't know. But at the end of the day, it's like it's something that probably should just be dealt with amongst yourselves and be left in private.
I thought it was like Melina was going to be in like an extra Divas match that apparently got cut for time or something like that with some of the other girls. And I don't know, maybe he was like, I don't know why he would like snub Trish like it was her fault that the match got bumped or something like that, because it wasn't like their match went over 4 minutes or anything like that.
Yeah, because the first thing I assumed, and again, I have no idea, but when I heard about him snubbing her after the match, I just assumed it was, you know, their time got cut, and all of his part of the match got cut, yet, you know, because I think, you know, not 75% of the match ended up being Trish and Michelle. So maybe he was of the impression that, you know, maybe she could have cut, you know, two or three of her six spots out and let other guys get a spot or two in on the big show. Because I think other than him just diving out onto Ziggler, he wasn't even in the match legally ever. But, you know, even if that was the case, it's like, you know, shit happens, time gets cut, people do stuff, you know. You're best to, you know, if you're hot enough at somebody, then pull them aside and talk to them privately. And or, again, realize that, you know, it's one match, life goes on, just, you know, bite your tongue and call it a day.
Now, Lance, other than Eve Torres, has anyone else other snubbed you in the back, or have you ever been felt that somebody just had something like a grudge against you, like made it that obvious to you?
When did Eve Torres snub me?
You once said on a show that you went backstage and that everybody came up to you and shook your hand and introduced, you know, said hello, except for Eve Torres.
Oh, okay. And again, I don't necessarily call that snubbing me, just that if she wasn't the only one that, or she was the only one that didn't say hi. I know the last time WWE was in town, I went. And I always, especially with a lot of the new divas that are really, you know, green to the business and stuff. Again, I never get hot because I could care less. But I enjoy going there to see who does say hi just out of curiosity. And I think after the 2 days, there was only maybe one or two that didn't. But the one that stuck out to me, it was Maxine off NXT. I don't even know if she's still on either of the shows, but because it was, again, there's a lot of girls that are, you know, on NXT that probably weren't in the business by the time I retired, so I certainly don't expect them to know me. And if I'm just standing around backstage in dress clothes, I could work for the building for all they know. But I was standing at ringside talking to Edge, and she was leaving the ring, and she stopped, said hi to Edge, looked at me, and kept walking. And, you know, Adam's chin just about dropped, and I started to laugh. And it's one thing if you don't know who I am, but the fact that I'm actually talking to Edge at ringside, you interrupt our conversation and say hi to him, even if I was his driver, it would have been at least polite to say hi.
Yeah, that's just...
So that was probably the worst etiquette I've ever witnessed at the shows, but most people are really friendly, and I remember at the time, too, that AJ, the one really tiny girl that was on NXT, when she introduced herself, I, you know, went to introduce myself, and she was like, no, I know who you are, I know who you are, and she actually seemed to have been watching wrestling long enough to remember who I was, but most of the other girls, you know, introduced themselves to me, and when I said who I was, they didn't seem to have any recollection of what I may or may not have ever been.
Now, on Impact last night, they had a match with Abyss and Rob Van Dam, and Rob, with a kick, and knocked two of Abyss's teeth out, and he's bleeding all over the place. Did you ever have any problems working with RVD when he throws some potatoes or something like that at you?
Well, there's certainly been a potato or two, but never any that I had problems with. And again, Rob's been there long enough. I suppose shit happens. But you know, in ECW, we knew Rob's stuff came, and you protected yourself and were cautious in that regard. And I have no doubt Rob remembers me stiffing him back. But no, Rob never, you know, maybe an occasional fat lip if you missed time one or something, but. I never had any that were really problematic. I got busted open hard way once when he kicked a chair into my face, but that was actually my fault. Rob was always stiff, and it was always a more physical night than working with anybody else. But I never had any teeth knocked out or eyes swollen shut or anything that was his fault.
Another question from the board is, it's actually something they wanted to ask or explain to Brian and Vinny, but could you explain the concept of Canadian Tire Money?
I remember hearing his show where he said Canadian Tire Coupons. But yeah, you get whenever you buy something at Canadian Tire, you get, I don't know the percentage, whether it be 1%, 5%. So if you spend $100 there, you'll get, you know, either $5 or 50 cents in Canadian Tire money back as like a rebate. And it's actually printed up bills like money, but they're Canadian Tire. They look sort of like Monopoly money, but have Canadian Tire on them. And you can spend them when you go back to Canadian Tire. So it's a age-old Canadian tradition of, you know, everyone's always got some degree of Canadian Tire money. Because someone sent him some, I think, and they called it a coupon. But it's Canadian Tire money. It's anyone in Canada will know what the hell you're talking about.
Go ahead.
Now, in the recent back issues of the Observer from 1994, they've been talking about you and Jericho coming into Smoky Mountain. I was wondering, coming into Smoky Mountain, especially in the, you know, like Tennessee and places like that, was it kind of a culture shock for you when you first got there? With just like the people and stuff like that?
It was a little bit, yeah. There was. They were far more hillbilly than I expected. Not quite as even just the when you get into some of the hills in Kentucky, just the level of racism I was shocked at.
Yep.
You know, where you actually see a sign on the side of the highway where they've, you know, been a proud member of the KKK for so many years, and I'm just sitting there with my jaw hanging up, going, "Are you serious?" Which obviously played well into New Jack and Mustafa with the gangster, because they just ate that stuff up, but. It was a culture shock, and just the different style and the slower style was a bit of a culture shock, too, that, you know, trying to work, you know, because Jim wanted us in because we were doing, you know, more exciting, more modern things, but we still had to maintain the Southern wrestling style and speed, too, so they could still cope with it. So it was sort of trying to find an interesting balance along the way.
Were you there when they started doing that angle with the gangsters, you know, with the old black-white thing?
Oh, yeah. We were probably getting close to finishing up, though. So I think their big TV debut was the Night of Legends show where Jericho broke his arm. Because I remember there being a really big in-ring promo with New Jack and Mustafa and Jim Ross. It was just a phenomenal promo. New Jack was just amazing with his promos not just back then, but back then he had such great material. I think at one point in time on TV, he actually called the NAACP a bunch of trained porch monkeys. He really let it fly with whatever he wanted to and managed to garner a lot of heat. I think at one point we actually had people picketing the shows. I think we actually ended up losing a big sponsor over it, so it may have come back to backfire, but he certainly had a lot of heat. And I remember when he first came, I think for his first meeting with Jim, they drove up in a brand new Corvette, and everyone said, "You're not going to be bringing that to the shows, are you?" And the first set of house shows he had to make up in the hills of Kentucky, he had a beat up old panel van that looked like he spent about $400 on, and the back of the van was full of spare tires. So, you know, New Jack knew where he was going, and he was coming prepared.
I just remember, I think it was one of the, an interview, and I think Jim Cornette actually got blamed for this, but this was like New Jack's idea where he like came out for an interview with a watermelon or something like that. So,
oh, this was, no, it was phenomenal. They come out, they had fried chicken, and they had a half a water, or a quarter of a watermelon. And while New Jack was cutting this amazing promo of, you know, I know what you people think of us. You think we're a bunch of chicken bones sucking. And while he's doing that, Mustafa actually puts the chicken leg into his mouth and manages to pull it out with no chicken left on the bone. And he's chewing that with chicken grease running down his face. And New Jack, you think we're a bunch of chicken bones sucking, watermelon eating? And when he says the watermelon eating, Mustafa buries his face in the watermelon and just starts, you know, mowing down with watermelon flying everywhere. So New Jack's on the roll of this amazing promo, and Mustafa's there with, you know, chicken bones in one hand, watermelon juice all pouring down his face, just looking like a crazed animal. It was just amazing. And garnered, again, probably garnered too much heat because they ended up getting the protesters and so forth, but it certainly made for amazing heat, and it was just an awesome promo.
I just thought it took a lot of, you know, especially in that area of the country, I guess, it kind of took a lot of balls to, you know, go as far as they did with that kind of stuff. I mean, because people down there can be legitimately crazy, you know.
Yeah, but New Jack's never been short on having balls and being willing to push the envelope, so he was the perfect guy for it. You tell New Jack people are going to be pissed, he'll just be more happy to do it.
Now, as far as New Jack, he's always come off as, like, living the gimmick, and I've seen, like, a different side of New Jack on Facebook, considering he's dating Terry Runnels, and I was wondering, is New Jack living the gimmick 24/7, or is there a different side that just very few people have seen that, you know, of him?
I don't know. I've never seen another side of him. You know, I don't like to say he was living the gimmick. I think a lot of that just was New Jack. Now, maybe now being, you know, God, we're, what, 17 years removed from Smoky Mountain. You know, perhaps he's matured and mellowed and there's a different side to him now. But, you know, I don't like to say it was gimmick he was living. I think that was, again, it may have only been, you know, 75% of his personality that he was only showing you that 75. But I think a lot of what New Jack was saying and doing was a lot of really New Jack, which is why it was so believable and so great. But, you know, perhaps now, again, I haven't seen any of his Facebook stuff, but yeah, perhaps he's mellowed now if he's coming off a little less crazy.
Well, Lance, I know we have to wrap up, so Couture, go ahead and ask your final questions before I get to mine.
Yeah, I was just, you know, Edge retired here the last couple of weeks, and I was just wondering your reactions to that, and did you know anything like that was coming beforehand?
Yeah, no, I had no heads up whatsoever that was coming. You know, especially with him on the road, it's like, you know, we trade a text or two, you know, every couple of weeks, but don't get into too much too deep. So I had no heads up whatsoever. I found out when I was on holidays just scanning the Observer site. And just managed to, you know, trade, I think, a text or two with him before he headed off to Europe. And he said he'd give me a call when he actually gets back and we can talk. So it really caught me out of the blue. Now, obviously, I knew he was planning on retiring inside of the next few years at some point, and knew that, you know, after the next surgery he had, whenever that, you know, eventually the time would come that he'd have to pack it in if he didn't ahead of time just because he wanted to. So the fact that he has to stop wrestling, you know, isn't a huge shock, although the fact that it's his neck, you know, there's always concern there. But the fact that I know he's been, you know, planning for his future and his retirement for more than a decade now, you know, I'm confident that he's going to be happy, healthy, and financially okay.
Yeah, I always wondered when, you know, when Austin got his first neck surgery, and he was able to last like a couple more years, and I was wondering because, you know, you had guys like Edge getting the same kind of neck surgery as Austin. I said, well, if Austin's out there for a couple more years, how long are these guys going to be able to keep going? And I guess to answer my question. So.
Yeah, I guess with Edge it was, I guess, 8 or 7, whatever it was. But, yeah, I think everyone's neck was at a different degree of, you know, being damaged. I think Amy's was the worst of them all because hers was one severe blunt trauma, you know, shooting a TV show in Vancouver. But, yeah, there was, you know, what, probably 8 or 10 guys that had it done around that period. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see when the time comes for, you know, the Rhinos and who else had them done, you know, Kurt, who had it done, and Hurricane, who had it done, and, you know, a lot of the other guys. So hopefully they'll keep an eye on it when they first start seeing the symptoms again of the, you know, weakness in the arms, that they get in right away and, you know, don't keep rolling the dice.
Now, Lance, you've put on your website some stuff you'd written about a couple things, the Death Tours and the Chris Candido, and I was wondering if you could just give us a quick story about each one of them real quick.
Yeah, because I didn't even realize it at first. I was just sorting through some old commentaries today because it was some that I hadn't, cataloged and properly kept away so I could keep them and not lose them. And I came across a good one of Chris Candido just telling some of the great stories we had together. And then I went and looked it up and realized that we're only a week, week and a half away from the sixth anniversary of his death. So I posted the one. But, yeah, Chris and I had so much fun working in Smoky Mountain. Chris was always, the hardest working guy on the show. There was three people out there. He still wanted to take, you know, moves off the top, bumps on the floor, and kill himself. And I remember there was one show, some small live event where, you know, the crowd is, you know, 100 people or whatever, and we had a tag match, and I actually talked him into doing an old Tennessee walk and talk spot of the water pump. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the water pump spot, but it's where the heels will take the babyface's arm, and when the heel has his back to the ring, he's facing the crowd, you hand him the babyface arm, and he pumps it over his shoulder like a water pump. And you do that several times, and then finally you set up to do it again, and the babyface reverses and hands the heel his own partner's arm. And he starts water pumping his own partner's arm. And I managed to convince Candido to do this on a Smoky Mountain host show. It was the most ludicrous non-bumping spot I think Chris Candido had ever done. And it was one of my glorious moments of convincing Chris to do just, not that Chris was adverse to doing comedy, but he was adverse to doing anything that involved him taking horrendous bumps. So having him do a silly gaga spot like that was fun. And then Death Tour, that thing's still going on. Every February, Tony Condello takes a bunch of guys up to the Northern Indian reservations that you can't get to in the summer because they're up through, you know, have to drive over water to get there. So unless you fly in on a helicopter, you can't get there unless you're in the winter. So every winter when the roads, when the lakes freeze over, they plow winter roads up there. And Tony Condello takes a dozen guys up in a van and puts on wrestling shows. And they are some of the most horrifying road trips you could ever possibly be on, in minus 50 degree weather. And I weathered that storm in 1995 with Edge was on the tour with me, Don Callis, Johnny Swinger, I think just Joey Lengen was on the tour, as well as a potbelly pig, a 18-foot python snake, Dr. Luther, Lenny Sinclair, my buddy from when I first broke in, and a bunch of others. So we had a lot of absurd fun ribbing people with a snake and with a potbelly pig.
Now, has anyone actually ever died?
None of the boys have ever died, but there are deaths almost every year. In that when you go up there, the shows are guaranteed, and that, you know, when he goes up there, you're going to run no matter what. But the one condition in the deal he has with the native band up there is that in the event of a death on the reserve, the shows are canceled because funerals are a really big deal up there. And I think every year they go, there's at least one show that gets canceled for a death, often suicide. Because these communities are so remote and it's so cold that I guess it's not uncommon to have suicides in the winter because you really are, unless you've been there, you have no idea how isolated these communities are and how depressing it must be to live up that isolated. So suicides are not all that uncommon on the tours. But yeah, to my knowledge, none of the boys have ever passed away on the trip.
Sounds like the show Deadliest Catch, where they go out and they go crab fishing every year, and at least once every year somebody doesn't come back from it. No, like ever.
Have you ever? I don't know if it airs down there. I think it does, but there's the I think it's Ice Roads or Ice Road Trucking or something.
Yeah.
Where they, I think it's more Alaskan stuff, where they go on ice roads to deliver goods and stuff. Well, that's the kind of roadways at times you have to drive on to get up to these reserves. So when you're talking about the isolation, when you see these truckers driving up there, it's like just imagine 15 of the boys in a 12-passenger van and a ring truck making this trip.
What kind of crowds would they get for those shows when they finally get to them? I mean,
It's a real crapshoot. Sometimes you'll get 25 people showing up and it'll be horrible, but other times you'll get to a decent sized reserve where, again, especially if it's timed right and they've just gotten their government checks and so forth, that you'll get 75 to 80% of the reservation showing up because nothing else goes up there. That you really are the only form of entertainment they get. So sometimes you might have, 400 or 500 people or more, packed into a high school gym, which is awesome. Sometimes it's bad that they'll have a bingo the same night and the parents drop the kids off at the wrestling show and they go to bingo. And then you have 500 unsupervised, not particularly well-behaved children running around. So it really is a crapshoot on what you get from a crowd. Sometimes it ends up being bedlam and pandemonium just trying to deal with the misbehaving people in the crowd.
Hey, I've enjoyed your reviews of the Clash of the Champions you've been doing. Are you going to be doing any more of those coming up?
Yeah, it's just finding the time, actually. I may have a chance to get to one this weekend, actually. I'm debating on doing the next WrestleMania or looking back at, like, Starrcade 88 or something. So I don't know which one I'll do next. Most of the people on my Facebook seem to want me to stick with the WrestleManias rather than jumping back and forth with some of the WCW ones, but I kind of enjoy looking back at some of the WCW ones.
Yeah. So, Lance, we want to thank you for doing the show. And just real quickly, I have to ask, because everybody's going to want me to ask this, is what the hell do we have to do to get you to come to Vegas this year?
This year is going to be a tough one. I do plan and want to get to one. It's more just a timing issue with my family. And my wife and kids went to Florida to visit my parents in March. My wife and I went to Hawaii in April, so trying to get another road trip planned this close is somewhat problematic. So this year is going to be a real next to impossible sell. But I do want to, and my wife has sort of voiced the opinion that maybe she'd be interested in going to Vegas too. So there is a chance that at some point we will try to manage to do it. If it was some other time of the year than the spring, it'd be easier to pull off. It's just unfortunate. Most of our family outings are in the spring, and planning three trips this close together gets problematic with kids.
Okay, Lance, real quickly, go ahead and plug anything you want to throw out there.
All righty, stormwrestling.com, which will take you to my website where I post commentaries and so forth, as well as it'll take you to Storm Wrestling Academy, where you can get information on my school, come train with me. I'm the one in the ring with you wrestling every day. Session starting May 2nd, I believe, and then another one in September. And then also you can see me, Lance Storm, on Facebook. And be sure to check out World of Hurt if you are anywhere that you can see that May 1st. And I think the World of Hurt website is wohtv.com. If not, there's links on my website as well for that. So check all of that out. And other than that, I don't think I have any more plugs.
Do you have Chris Jericho's number you want to throw out there for everyone to call in and vote?
Yes, Monday. Please, even if you're not watching the damn show, if you vote during the hours of the show, give him the support. He needs it. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. 1-800-868-3409. I actually have it memorized. And you can vote numerous times. So max out every phone you have. Help a brother out. The guy's been busting his hump entertaining you guys for years. The least you can do is take a few minutes and place some votes.
Yeah, I used all my votes up this past Monday and plan to do it again. So hopefully he'll stick around for a little while longer.
Mm-hmm. So he's really doing well and trying hard. So it'd be nice if he could maybe even make the final.
Yeah. Well, cool, Lance. Thank you so much. We really appreciate it. And you have a good night.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Cool, Lance. So, Kachar, what were we talking about before Lance got on the phone? I don't even recall if we ended to finish that conversation.
All I was talking about, I went to Legoland today.
Oh, that's right. Okay, we didn't get into anything.
With my niece and my two nephews, and they played and got a bunch of stuff. And I said I've gotten to the point where now I just, if I'm going to buy them something, it's going to either have something to do with pro wrestling or Star Wars, so I can play with them as well.
Right? I mean, you got to get some thrill out of it if you're going to spend your money, especially with...
Yeah, like I'll go... Like, they're into Transformers, so I'll go find, like, they got these Transformers that are, like, cross with Star Wars. Like, you can buy, Boba Fett's ship, and it transforms into Boba Fett or something like that. It's pretty cool.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool. I remember, that actually reminds me, I remember, this is, you know, since I am a little older than you, but I remember being 5 years old and having all the original Star Wars figures, you know, like the original Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. And,
I had all that stuff, man.
Yeah.
I was in the theater seeing the first Star Wars.
How old were you when the first one came out? Because I was like six or seven, somewhere around there. I mean,
yeah,
I was pretty young.
In 1977. And I was born in 74, so I was about 3 years old.
Wow, and you still had the toys that early. Well, I remember I had the fucking TIE Fighter. Oh, wait, which one? I had Luke's spaceship. And,
X-Wing.
X-Wing. Yeah, that thing was so fucking cool. And, like, my dumbass, first thing I get it, I fucking chuck it in the air like it could really fly. Luckily, it didn't break or anything. But, yeah, I remember having all that fucking early Star Wars shit, dude.
Well, for Christmas, when your Transformers were the big thing, so I got Megatron for Christmas. You know, he transforms into a gun. So I tried to transform it, and I broke him in half.
The Megatron sucked, dude. I never had it, but if I see one at the store or something, I could never really figure it out. The Megatron just never really worked as a toy, but I remember, to this day, I got my Optimus Prime somewhere in a drawer here somewhere.
I thought the most awesome thing were, like, the Dinobots. You know, the Transformers are the dinosaurs. I don't know why I thought they were so awesome.
I remember how awesome it was when G.I. Joe went to the Kung Fu Grip. Because then you could really, like, have little wrestling matches with your fucking G.I. Joes, and they could actually do, like, really badass moves.
Yeah, not those shitty big rubber figures like WWF had. We couldn't do nothing.
Oh, dude, and you know what? I'm sure they're still in the house somewhere, but you remember the old, like, really hard rubber WWE ones? They had, like, a Hulk Hogan one and a Jimmy Snuka one.
Yeah.
And I had the Hulk Hogan and Jimmy Snuka. And I must have had a billion fucking matches in my house. So I'd fucking write out like 60-man tournaments where I had like a, you know, Hulk Hogan had like 32 different names. And I was a pretty fucked up kid back in the day. Had a lot of time to waste, I guess. But I remember that. That was crazy.
I thought the cool ones were the AWA action figures that were made that stuff
like
the He-Man figures were.
Yeah, they look just like He-Man. They were fucking jacked like motherfuckers.
Greg Gagne was a ripped motherfucker.
Did that even look like that in real life?
Yeah, I thought that was so cool because I had like the Road Warriors and I had the ring and stuff like that.
Yeah, I remember those ones were fucking cool as shit. I'm trying to remember if there's any other fucking like really cool shit back in the day. Do you remember there was these ones, they were like action figures, but they were like robots and they were like plastic and they were like really, really thin. And now they're probably like way before your time.
Those Bendems?
No, not Bendems. These were like, I remember the Bendems.
Like the stretch figures? I remember those.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I remember I used to have all kinds of shit back in the day when I was little. But I really didn't have any too much things that I wanted to talk to you about. So unless you really have something you want to talk about, I guess we could start to wrap up the show already.
You haven't been watching Deadliest Catch, have you? The new season started?
No, I haven't been watching the new season. I kind of stopped watching maybe in episode two or after what's his name died last year, so it's kind of hard getting back into it.
Yeah, I understand that.
Understand what?
I can understand that, you know, being...
Oh, you can understand it. Okay, I got it.
Yeah.
I thought you said you didn't understand it. So. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, if I ever see it on TV, you know, I'll definitely stop to watch it, but honestly, I don't watch TV anymore, dude. I used to be like the biggest couch potato and just watch TV all fucking day while I was getting high, and now I'm freaking either listening to audio or fucking doing Facebook or something, dude. And the only things that I watch regularly on TV are, of course, Raw and Ultimate Fighter. But this year, I really haven't been paying too much attention to it. And as far as TV shows,
I watched one episode of Ultimate Fighter, and I haven't gone back to watching it.
Yeah, this year's kind of sucked. And but as far as like TV shows, the only thing I watch is I watch Modern Family, because that's the best fucking TV show on TV right now. And I'll watch Sons of Anarchy, but of course they're on a break. I watch The Walking Dead, but they're on a break. I watch Entourage, but they're on a break. And I watch True Blood, but they're on a break. So basically, the only thing I'm watching right now on TV is Modern Family and Raw and when the Spurs are playing. So that's like basically the only TV that I watch.
I started watching, I'm sure you've seen the previews of the show on Spike, the show Coal. Have you seen previews of that?
No. What's it called
again? The guys working in the coal mines.
Oh, yeah. I saw a commercial for it or two.
I watched a couple episodes of that. That's like the most claustrophobic television show I've ever watched.
I bet.
it's not very exciting. I mean, at least in the Deadliest Catch, you know, there's excitement being out there in the sea and stuff like that in the storms and, you know, catching crab. But working in a coal mine, I don't think people can do that stuff.
Well, they're just trying to, they think they have like they're trying to strike the hot iron because, you know, they had those dudes in, was it Chile or whatever? The dudes that were trapped in the mine for like months.
Yeah.
While they were trying to dig a little hole, and then these guys had to actually like lose weight because they could only be so big, and they were actually going to get, if one of those guys had been a big fat ass, he was staying in there. You know what I mean? So they got the publicity for that, so they're like, okay, let's do that. So you know how the reality TVs are, though. If something comes in, they'll take advantage of it.
I'd rather be out on the Bering Sea than working in them coal mines.
Yeah. The best thing ever, did you ever see, I don't know if you watched South Park, but there was a South Park where they were making fun of, like, Deadliest Catch and the Whale Hunters?
No, I didn't watch that in a long time.
Well, there was one where, like, that a couple of them joined the Whale Hunters because they were going to be like, you know, going to stop the Japanese from killing whales and shit. And then it turned out that, you know, they didn't actually do anything but like yell at them and ask them not to fucking kill the whales and shit. It's hilarious. I'm not explaining it very good. But anything else?
No, I think that's about it. I got some, I'm finishing up on my Brian and Vinny Rewind for 2010, so I'm probably going to post those here next week from January through December. I've been going and putting all that stuff together. I got through the month of the wedding and putting all that stuff together. I just love listening to that shit.
Yeah, that was some good shit during the wedding. But you know what you need to do, sure, is once you get the rewinds out of the way, is you need to make a giant, super mega granny collection.
Well, I have all the granny stuff on those things.
Yeah, but, like, put them all together. I mean, because she's having some, like, moments, dude, lately. Like she didn't say anything about me this week, but, like, the last 2 weeks, she's, like, brought up stuff. It's like, I don't know what you're talking about, granny. But, and then, like, she's at Kendra, and she kept this telling Brian, I watched the show. I know. And she gets Gator said, I watched the show, Brian, and of course she's wrong.
Yeah, the Thursday show I look forward to more than any of them because my two favorites, you got Granny and you get a Barry Impact, so that's my favorite show of the week.
Yeah, Granny's awesome. I remember there was one where like somebody asked if she ever drank milk out of a sack.
I just listened to that the other day. Oh, God.
Then he goes, well, have you? And she kind of like ignores him, and then you hear Brian. What
and she moves on. And then Yeah, and they somebody sent in the, what does Granny think of teabagging? And that was tremendous.
Oh, man. I sent her a PM to see if, like, at Vegas, if when we're having the dinner, if she'd be willing to give a speech for everybody. She told me she'd think about it, so maybe we can get a YouTube video of Granny.
What do you do discussions for her to answer? Do you do that on her Facebook?
Yeah, she'll, like, ask for something on her wall, and then people start posting underneath it. And I always wait until she tells people to stop asking questions, and then I'll ask my question, or I'll get offended that you did that just to cut me off.
Yeah, I was going to go and post up there the other day, but see, she's, I was saying capital letters will stop. I got no question for 2 weeks, so I didn't post anything.
I posted like something about, you knew I was going to ask my question, and then she deleted it. Well, she didn't delete it right away, and then like she said, cry away, and I was like, I'm not crying. I know this is just part of your anti-Ed agenda. And then I told her about something that I kind of did for her in Vegas. Well, I'm trying to like have done for her, so something she'll enjoy in Vegas. So she left that post, but she deleted the other two like right away. She's got a quick delete finger on her keyboard there.
She's on that Facebook all the time. So we see her up on the instant messenger thing.
Yeah, she'll be. It's like I see her on there more than 90% of the people on my friends.
I'll be up at 5 o'clock in the morning and see her on there.
I'll see her like 5 a.m. On Sundays I'll come home for an hour before the paper out, like maybe at 3:30, and she's on there. She'll be on there like at 12. She must take like cat naps or something.
Every time that Brian calls her, she's just woken up from her nap. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning or something.
Yeah, that's a trip. And then she's eating like bacon and eggs and stuff. Well, we'll go ahead and wrap up here.
Let me plug Pro Wrestling Flashback, because we did a show last night. We're going to be back this Thursday with WCW 1998 Part 2. And you can find that at blogtalkradio.com/Cotrera. And I think it's going to start being at 10 Central every Thursday night, so everybody can check that out if they want to.
So I had set up the show for tonight. You know, usually I do it on Fridays, but I did it on Thursday, and I saw that you had done that, and then went to work, and I just checked my emails right before I jumped out of the car, and I see Stevie's like, "Hey, what's going on? Did you guys screw up the time? It says the show starting at 1 a.m, and I was like, "Oh shit, I fucked up." And then like later on when I got home, I'm like, "Oh man, he must have saw Couture's show and thought it was ours or whatever." But yeah, for a minute there, I kind of thought I fucked up the show. But anyway, everybody check out angrymarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at angrymarks.com, along with a lot of other shows. And I don't know, it seems like every time I look at there's like freaking 20 or 30 shows. But everyone, check that out. I'm sure you'll find something you like. You know, we're by far the best show on there, but, you know, you might find something else you like. Everyone, come back next week. Craig's working on, he's got some people coming up. It's just a matter of hammering out the date, which hopefully we'll have, I guess next week. If not, we'll have something to talk about. I've had a few couple requests, actually, from Euros asking, because of the Royal Wedding, that we do a Euro-based show, which really wouldn't know a whole lot of European wrestlers, but I don't know, maybe we'll do like a little thing on it or something. So either way, we'll have something to talk about next week. And
Brown, he was the champion of Europe.
Yeah, we'll talk about, the greatest champion of Europe ever, Elo Brown. And we'll talk about some of that stuff next week. So everybody come back next week, and we will talk to everybody then.
Be the man! You gotta beat the man! You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the matrix shit! Let's go hook him up! I'm gonna dog you until I wear your Texas.
I got my wife tonight.